from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. The future of the Stanford University Press is uncertain after the school administration proposed massive funding cuts to the more than 125-year-old press, which publishes humanities and social sciences research. But the academic community is pushing back, saying that the publication of original research is essential to the mission of the prestigious institution. And then at 10:30, award-winning mezzo-soprano Janae Bridges took a star turn last night as Carmen in a new San Francisco opera production. She'll join us to talk about what she loves about the role and the character of Carmen and why she traded a promising basketball career in for the opera. That's all next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Stanford University Press has published research in the humanities and social sciences since 1892. But earlier this year, Stanford University turned down a subsidy request from the press, with some in the administration arguing the press should be self-sustaining. Supporters of the press say it is central to Stanford's academic mission, and they fear that the university is trying to shut it down. After pushback from the academic community, the university has pledged financial support to the press for another year. Joining us to talk about the future of the Stanford University Press is Scott Jasek. He's editor of Inside Higher Ed, a news website covering higher education. Welcome, Scott Jasek.
Great to be here.
Good to have you with us. And Thomas Mullaney is also with us. He's here in studio. He's professor of Chinese history at Stanford, and he's also editor of digital Stanford University Press publication, The Chinese Deskscape. And we invited a representative of the university to join us, but they declined. Let me welcome Thomas Mullaney.
It's wonderful to be here.
Good to have you. Scott Jasek, let me begin with you. This proposal originally came from the provost, Persis Strell, and essentially she was proposing a shutdown, wasn't she?
Well, she was proposing to stop giving any money. Now, Stanford Press brings in some money, so they would have had to publish far fewer books. They wouldn't have necessarily had to disappear. But the underlying premise that a university press should be self-sustaining or profitable really runs against the grain. Stanford Press is a leading figure in many fields, Middle Eastern studies, Asian studies, business, literature, philosophy. The way the ecosystem of scholarship works, a university press publishes scholarship not just by Stanford professors, but by all professors, and other university presses publish Stanford professors. The ecosystem works because you have a bunch of presses publishing great scholarship. It falls apart if they don't. Now, when Stanford wants to help a scientist, it builds a lab, and that helps the Stanford scientist. But in the area of scholarly publishing, you need an ecosystem, and people view this as an attack on the ecosystem.
Well, we've got, I should say by full disclosure, by the way, that my first book was published at Stanford University about 12 years ago, but the press was being given about $1.7 million a year, and the press brings in $5 million in book sales. So I suppose the idea here is not that far-fetched that the press can be self-sustaining, and yet it needs it needs that $1.7 million or more, particularly, I imagine, because so many of these books do not make any money.
Right, and that should arguably not be the key question about a university press. They're publishing books that change disciplines, that change the way we think about certain issues. They're not going to be publishing a lot of bestsellers. And that is not necessarily the way to judge a press. They just published a 20-year project to translate the Zohar. That is going to be important to many people. It's not going to make them a lot of money. And it's important to remember that universities do lots of things that aren't profitable. Stanford is fortunate that it has a lot of scholars who do research in areas that does produce revenue. But that's not the be-all and end-all of all scholarship, particularly at a university as wealthy as Stanford that has resources.
Well, it has a $26 billion endowment, and that's why many people are saying if you stop the press, so to speak, here, or you don't endow the press, you're going to have other universities saying, we'll cut the press here and there. I mean, this has really gone on as a big issue throughout the country.
Absolutely. To many universities, supporting a university press is something they view as an obligation and that their faculty members want them to do. If Stanford cuts way back, it will be much harder for defenders of university presses elsewhere. It's also worth noting, I think, that Stanford has been a leader in digital publications. This is not a case of a press that hasn't done innovative things. In keeping with Stanford's location, they've in fact been cutting edge in the area of digital publication first or digital scholarship. So they do a lot of non-traditional work. That is part of why they have a strong reputation.
So this is going to have relevance across the academic world. And, in fact, the Republican governor of Kentucky has said university presses really are unnecessary. There's a big debate going on here. And what do we have now in the way of funding for Stanford? It's only secure for one more year. There was a reprieve.
Yes, there was a reprieve, and there are a bunch of meetings coming up. And
there's been a lot of outcry, we should mention, too.
There's been a lot of outcry. It's also the case that many Stanford faculty members and the humanities sort of feel like the less privileged child in the Stanford family, and this has brought those tensions front and center. And while they did get the one-year reprieve, there are many concerned that the questions being asked, that an underlying assumption is that university presses should make money. And many question that underlying assumption, not that the university presses shouldn't try to be creative and entrepreneurial, but that they should only have publishing areas that stress the lucrative nature of what they publish.
Scott Jasek again is editor of Inside Higher Ed, a news website covering higher education. Thomas Mullaney's here in studio. He's professor of Chinese history at Stanford. Why not be self-sustaining, Professor Mullaney? I mean, the argument can go that the press has capital coming in. It can make profit. Shouldn't it be self-sustaining?
No, I want to build on the points that were just made with regard to that question. Something that we need to realize is that, you know, this sounds like an obscure topic, a kind of inside baseball discussion that is relevant only to academia. But the fact of the matter is that university presses and academic journals, but university presses in particular, are the infrastructural grid. They are the electricity grid of all knowledge production in our society, not just in universities, but also in high school textbooks, middle school textbooks, and the bestsellers that many of us pick up at the airport bookstore and read and love. And the simple fact of the matter is, just let's think of some bestsellers. So the implicit idea that a university press should make money is the idea that we should all be writing books like Malcolm Gladwell or Margot Shetterly or Yuval Harari.
Jared Diamond,
exactly. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is that if you, and I think these authors will be the first to admit it, if you scratch at the surface of a nonfiction bestseller, what you'll see is that these books are not based on original research in the sense of venturing into the archive, you know, getting down into a 10-year process. Instead, so much of it is built upon the work that of others that are published on university presses that sell in the hundreds, maybe in the thousands, but certainly not in the tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands. And so the all of the textbooks, middle school textbooks, high school textbooks, they are not based on original research either. They have to rely on rigorous, and here's the key point, peer-reviewed scholarship that is produced by university presses. Peer review is not something we think about a lot, but peer review, the idea that there are a set of experts who anonymously read through a manuscript and have the power to endorse it for publication on the basis of its rigor and its structure, or to say, listen, this is not up to the standards of the academy, this is not up to the standards of scholarship, and we recommend either serious revision or non-publication. Peer review is what is the gatekeeper of all knowledge in our society. And here's a kind of a wake-up call. Peer review is run exclusively by university presses and by journals. If we do anything to weaken or destroy this ecosystem of university presses, we will have no checks on the quality or rigor of any knowledge. We will be living in a totally, entirely post-truth environment if we start messing with this ecosystem. It is at the core of everything that we know as human beings.
Thomas Mullaney again is professor of Chinese history at Stanford, and I'm going to invite our callers to join us. What do you think about this whole, it's not just an academic argument, as Professor Mullaney said, it's an argument that really concerns the rigors of research and scholarship, and many untenured people are concerned about this. People, particularly in the humanities and social sciences, are concerned about this. But people are concerned throughout the United States who are involved with academic presses and university presses, which, by the way, don't have great promotion budgets, which ought to be seen in the whole picture here. Our toll-free number is available right now. It's 866-733-6786. And you can join us, and we invite you to do that. Your thoughts are welcome. 866-733-6786. You can also join us, of course, by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website and posting any questions or comments you might have there at kqed.org/forum. And also join us by going to Facebook or Twitter. You can tweet us at KQED Forum. Can't the presses do their own fundraising?
There has long been a desire by Stanford University Press to try to tap into the wealth of of donors, and the fact of the matter is that they have been restricted from doing so. So this is a crisis that, in its immediate sense, started in the spring, but it's a long time coming. The press has been systematically underfunded by our university, by Stanford University, for a very, very long time. And so now we have, the initial decision by the administration was basically to push it off of a fiscal cliff. And then because of the outcry, this reprieve, a one-year funding, is more or less a stay of execution. It is something to be celebrated. But what all of us want is to see Stanford University Press endowed, it's secure in its future. And I point out, with a stroke of a pen, Stanford University could endow Stanford University Press, ensure its longevity well into the future, for something like a tenth of 1% of its endowment, a rounding error. And it could bring this crisis to a close, place the press on absolutely firm footing, and then we could all be pulling in the same direction again.
And there has been a really strong faculty pushback on
absolutely.
This.
Absolutely. I've never seen outrage like this in my 13 years at Stanford. Never.
And just a quick footnote with you, Scott Jasek, then I want to get our callers involved in this. There is the argument that Stanford, one of the most prestigious universities in the country, adds to its prestige by its academic press, and that's probably true for academic presses throughout the country?
Absolutely. The areas where I mentioned that the press has a strong reputation, it's not just Stanford professors. They have a reputation for publishing cutting-edge scholarship by people all over the world, and that's what builds this world of ideas and scholarship. Similarly, Stanford professors don't just publish at the press. They depend on other universities with expertise and book series in other topics to publish their work. Again, paying the cost of peer review and if they promote the book, promoting the book. Stanford benefits from other universities supporting university presses.
And I got to ask you, Tom Mullaney, since you're a professor of Chinese history, I believe there was a book that came out about Tiananmen Square, the anniversary of Tiananmen Square, that would not have been published had it not been for the endowment.
This is an absolutely critical point. Let's game out in our mind what's being imagined here about market-driven scholarship. We've seen what happens when newsrooms in television media organizations, when this fate befell them, when suddenly people walked into the newsroom and said, "Are you profitable?" Well, what happened? Bureau desks were shut down. The rigors of journalism came under siege, and we saw the rise of clickbait journalism, this kind of insubstantial, non-rigorous, just churned out stuff that whose sole purpose is to generate ad revenue. Do we really want clickbait scholarship, clickbait research? I, for one, would say that that is a dark future to imagine. And that is what happens if we say to university presses, you need to operate with a profit mindset.
Let me go to our callers, and we begin, Mike, with you. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, hi. I just a quick comment. My comment is that it's absolutely silly to think that you can make money on academic research. You can't make money on the biology of a worm. You're not going to do it. But if you want to make money, pumped porn or something, but absolutely not academic research. You'll never make money. That's just my comment.
All right, Mike, we thank you for that comment. We'll go right to another caller in Concord. Susan, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, Susan from Concord. What struck me about this whole conversation is two things. Number one is if Stanford wants to lead the way as it has in the past, this is a fantastic opportunity for not only it to fund this press, but to recognize that there's other small presses around the country who do need funding. Stanford has money. This is a way for them to become a hero in this field, not to cut the legs out of this field.
All right. And I'm sorry, you had something else you wanted to say here, Susan, please.
And I was just going to say that, you know, the small presses, as well as Stanford Press, in this country, we value knowledge, like your other callers, like your guests were saying, and especially in this climate. If this is, you know, it looks like it's almost politically motivated to end this press. They need to change the tide, and we need to become more of a truth-based, knowledge-based country again.
All right, and I thank you for those comments. I want to read some comments that are coming in from a listener named Catherine. It's a personal story. She writes, I'm a 2016 Stanford History PhD in early modern British history, now an assistant professor at Grinnell College in Iowa. My advisor, David Como, published his first book with Stanford University Press on religious radicals in 1630s London. It helped him secure tenure at Stanford, and he followed up on it this year with a second book from Oxford on the origins of representative democracy in England. He has trained four PhDs, two of whom have already published their own books with university presses and who together have served as faculty at least eight institutions. As a junior scholar, I've been able to make invaluable connections in my field for leveraging the strength and prestige of David's scholarship. If one of the world's wealthiest universities declines to adequately fund its university press, the decision will have generational impacts in the humanities and social sciences. It is wholly inadequate to provide additional PhD stipends while threatening the pathways that scholars rely on to build their careers and share their ideas. And the humanities and the social sciences keep coming up here, I think, Tom Mullaney, because the reality is Stanford's in Silicon Valley. It's a pipeline to Silicon Valley. And there's been, in many people's minds, much too much emphasis on technology and on science to the exclusion of the humanities and the social sciences.
Yeah, that's a wonderful point. I mean, I in addition to working on the history of China, I work on the history of science and technology, and I consider myself to be as much of a kind of early adopter of technology as most people. So what I'm about to say doesn't come from a Luddite position. And that is a very basic point. The STEM field, science, technology, engineering, and medicine, their purview, what they are here to do, is not to answer the same kinds of questions that we grapple with in the humanities, the social sciences, and the arts. So if you think about medicine. Two of the main things that medicine is here to do, and God bless them for doing it, is helping us live longer and helping us live higher quality lives as we live. It has nothing to say, however, about what we're supposed to do with that extra time on Earth, or what we're supposed to do with that Sunday that we can enjoy because someone has allowed us to enjoy in peace. Engineers, and those who build our communication networks are trying to think about how to enhance the ability to communicate. They have nothing to say about what we are to say to our family members and our loved ones and our political opponents. All of those debates about meaning, about what we're supposed to do with our time on Earth, about all of these profound questions, that is the purview of the humanities, social sciences, and arts, generally speaking. And that's one reason. If you go on a tour with Stanford undergrads about if you want to come, they spend a lot of time talking about the humanities because they know that the students and their parents care about these things. But the fact of the matter is if you look at the sort of treatment in this action against this side of campus, humanities, social sciences, and arts, you know, one could look back and say, listen, if this is what you think of what we do in this part of campus, why not just fess up to the fact that, you know, this is the Caltech of the North. That would, you'd be a wonderful, rigorous, amazing institution. You would have an exclusive STEM focus, and let's move forward. If this is, and of course, no one wants that.
Well, I'm also thinking about a book. I just see that Michael Roth, who's now president of Wesleyan, has a new book out, and he wrote a wonderful book about liberal education and how important the humanities are and how important the social sciences are. Even if you want to make your kid learn code and make a living that way, it still has a great deal to do with enhancement and making for a full human being. Let me get some more callers on
actually,
the boost.
If I could just add something that I think is important here, another area of strength for Stanford is Stanford Press is business. They publish scholarly books about the economic downturn, about startup companies, serious scholarly books in this area that very much are fitting within the Silicon Valley mentality.
You're not going to see them at the airport, are you?
You're not going to see them on the airport, but they're raising important questions for people who run businesses.
Right.
And I think it's important to remember that Stanford Press does that too.
Absolutely.
In addition to the great work in the humanities.
All right, we've got a caller from Chicago I want to go to next. Bruce, you're on.
Yes, I've been working for University Presses for probably 40 years as a sales rep, and I just want to say, first of all, that the all the eloquent things that have been said in support of Stanford Press are very important, and it's interesting that the administration has had absolutely nothing to say in response. They've been largely silent. But what I wanted to say was that in the same
way, we did invite them, by the way. I wanted to reiterate. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they've had plenty of chances to respond, and they've said nothing. Anyway, the other point I wanted to make was that in a similar way, we were talking about the grid of scholarship, there's also another way in which University Presses are very important in a national sense. That has to do with our literary culture, because University Presses give a chance to writers who would not otherwise be published, short story writers, novelists. Some of them go on to be published with major New York houses. And so, you know, that's another sense in which the Stanford president and provost are entirely ignorant of the damage that they will do if they kill this press.
Tom, I thank you for your comments. I want to go to another caller from Rhode Island, Newport, Rhode Island. Tom is joining us. Tom, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm actually an academic who's published with university presses and with commercial presses, and this really stuns me because the country is facing a knowledge collapse. And university presses, along with libraries, have been kind of the barricades against that knowledge collapse. And I think without the university presses, and I'm really shocked, I'm glad Professor Mullaney brought up a rounding error. I'm shocked that Stanford, for the cost of a rounding error in its endowment, would contribute to this knowledge collapse, because without university presses, and again, I've been on both sides of that publishing experience, and they're both good experiences, but they're different. We're going to turn into a culture that's chasing around trying to fact-check Naomi Wolf and Annie Jacobson. And I don't understand how any top-ranked university would think it's not part of its mission to defend the frontiers of knowledge through university presses. And I hope that this does not become a trend, but unfortunately, I think it's starting to head that way.
Well, Tom, I thank you for your call, and we will have to follow this story and see where it goes. In the meantime, any announcements to make here, Thomas Mullaney?
No, just that, you know, I think I speak for a number of us to say we're not satisfied with this stay of execution, this one-year reprieve. We want to see Stanford University Press on stable footing in perpetuity, and Stanford flip of the pen could put that in action, and that's what we really need to see, not just for us, but for the entire community.
Thank you, Professor Mullaney. Thank you, Scott Jasik. We're going to meet an opera singer who was a basketball player starring in Carmen when we return on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.